between the Philippines and the United States, between U.S. and the Thailand. It has been existent almost from the Cold War era, and for those who might have forgotten, this came in place because of the spread of communism that was happening during the Cold War. And I think I will delve into the, as we understand, the containment policy in a moment. But that's the basic reason why the regional organization of the ASEAN was created. And that's also partly the reason why the United States has stepped into the conflict that's happening in the South China Sea. So I will delve more into that a little bit, but then I will leave some space for one more song and then perhaps talk about things that are happening right now with the G7 summit that was held and also the recent US-India cooperations that are going on in the United States. So yeah, that is going to be the format or the flow of the rest of the show. And the song that I'm going to play for now is by another favorite artist of mine, which is Kixi, and it's from her album called All My Friends. And I'm going to play the song called Butterflies because I feel the temperatures are rising here and it actually feels like summer. So I'm pretty excited about that. So let's hear the Butterflies and then we'll get more into the topic.
Thank you.
So you were listening to Butterflies by Kixie, who is a Canadian Canadian content creator. She has not content creator, I mean music creator. Oh my god. So for like my personal update, I think for a second I'm just going to digress from the topic and just say that so since Elon Musk has taken over the Twitter, so he has blocked APIs for academics, so you as an academic have no longer the access to Twitter data unless you pay a certain amount of money. And the research project that I work on directly involves looking at data from Twitter. So yeah, I am very excited about changing my research question and thinking about some different ways to collect data. So that's my personal update. Totally unrequired here in this show, but yes, I think it's good to position ourselves as quote-unquote reporters or journalists, because we are also humans, and yeah, it's important to reflect both on our positionality and our biases, and also important to talk about what we understand. And yeah, you should not obviously form your opinions on that, but like take it as a grain of salt. I have another interesting song which my mom also really enjoyed that I'm going to play after this one, but I'm gonna briefly try to unpack the containment policy that happened in the 1950s and the 70s as the expanse of communism took place after the World Wars, and specifically the World War II. So containment policy is a U.S. foreign policy treated Southeast Asia as a area for competition with the Soviet Union, which was Russia at the time, which also included a whole lot of countries, so it was not just Russia. So yeah, so this was a sort of policy framework which was being applied by the United States during the time, and the former U.S. Secretary of the State at the time, Henry Kissinger, mentioned that the objective was to purge our foreign policy of all sentimentality, as they were fighting in some way, at least ideologically, the Cold War period. So their enemy was the Soviet Union. So with communism, there was an understanding that there is a different appeal of communism in the Southeast Asia, and it was understood as like a wave of the future that every country in the Southeast Asia is going to become a communist state or a socialist in some way at least, which was considered a direct threat for the security of the United States and the West. And the appeals of communism included having dramatic economic and technological advances of the Soviet Union, those anti-colonial ideals, and the importance of association, having greater personal power, and there was also an existing public disappointment and resentment at the time, and there was high levels of poverty and all sorts of violence happening around colonial countries, which included Vietnam. Thailand is actually the only country in the Southeast Asia which was never colonized, or that's what they understand, because there have been attempts to colonize Thailand, but it was never successful. But Thailand was one, Brunei was the other one. So yeah, there were like so many countries that were colonized by the time of 1950s. But as the struggle of independence took waves, especially in the Indian Peninsula, for example, India got independence in 1947. Pakistan got separated. Bangladesh also happened to separate. We had this strides of anti-colonialism and independence happening in different regions. So if you were to move away from your colonial powers, you were supposed to have like some other framework to run the country, right? So at the time like that, we had the communism as an ideology, as an social structure, which was appealing for some of these national leaders in some countries. So for the countries who tended to lean towards the Marxist or Leninist understandings of communism were considered a threat for, a direct threat for the United States. So that is why it sought to have a policy called the containment policy to contain, so to say, the extent to which communism is being spread and the countries who are becoming communist states. Yeah, essentially that is what the containment policy is. And the father of this policy, like the person who had this idea, this brilliant idea of stopping countries from becoming communist, was George Kennan, who called for having coordinated use of political, economic, and military influence to prevent the expansion of Soviet control in some vital regions, which definitely included the Southeast Asia, as there was a struggle of French colonial power in Vietnam, which was trying to liberate itself, have independence, and all those sort of things. China, under Mao, was turned to a socialist state. So there was, though there was no direct relationship between Soviet Union at the time and China in the very beginning, but the U.S. just understood them as the same because they were not capitalist. So anything that is not U.S. or does not like the West is enemy. Essentially, that was the policy. So yeah, under that, we also had the Truman Doctrine, which meant that, which was like a policy of the United States to support free people who are resisting subjugation of armed minorities or outside pressures. So it was pledged that U.S. would come to support in case of free people, so being subjugated by any armed minorities or outside pressures. So first of all, you can see free people, armed minorities, outside pressures. Well, that was being all angled and positioned to framing Soviet Union as like a troublemaker, which I'm not here to debate, okay? I'm not here to take sides as to if Soviet Union was doing better or like the United States ideology is better or not. That is not what I'm trying to do here. I'm just trying to explain what the containment policy is and what was happening at the time. So under US's policy for containment, there were different ways in which it contained. It tried to contain the expansion of spread of communism. And one of them was having different economic strategies. In the late 40s, early 50s, there were different economic assistances that were provided for anti-communist policymaking, which included having the Marshall Plan, which was done to rebuild the Western Europe. There were different technological and economic resources that were sent to many different countries to help them rebuild themselves after the World War and also after their independence from their colonial masters, so as to say. Yeah, so U.S. was trying to be helpful. They also provided, in some cases, direct military support. So the creation of NATO happened during this time. And interestingly, there was creation of SEATO at the time, which is, SEATO is S-E-A-T-O. So it's the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization. So it's very similar to the understanding of NATO we have. So North India, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, I'm so sorry. So SEATO was supposed to do some sort of similar things. So this South Asia Collective Defense Treaty was one of those things. And this organization included Australia, France, Great Britain, New Zealand, Pakistan, interestingly. And just two actually South Asian states, which were Philippines and Thailand, and obviously United States was part of this. So you can see how the organization, which is meant to protect the Southeast Asia, or like was meant to have like a collective defense treaty, included all of the members who were direct allies of the United States. So that is what was happening in 1954. So the headquarters were stationed in Thailand, Bangkok, and Seattle's principal role was to sanction the U.S. presence in Vietnam. So what was happening when I say sanction is that the Vietnam War, the first Indochina War, as we call it, was under play at this time. So interestingly, what happened was, though this organization was full of allies of the United States, they all opposed the presence of U.S. in Vietnam War. But obviously, Vietnam went ahead and was like, the United States went ahead and was like, no, we are going to establish a rule in Vietnam and we're going to help the people of Vietnam. So that's what was happening. But I think Vietnam War deserves its own discussion. So not going in there, but like they created the Seattle organization to help with containment in Southeast Asia region. So Seattle is sort of the predecessor to what was happening in the creation of the regional bloc of the ASEAN. So ASEAN, as I was saying, is the Association of Southeast Asian, East Asian Nations, which included 10 members at first, which is Brunei, Cambodia, Indonesia, Laos, Malaysia, Myanmar, Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam, which is a host to at least 500 million people. And these countries collectively had a GDP of at least $750 US billion. So that's a very, very big and important organization in of itself. And interestingly, Seattle is the predecessor to ASEAN, because ASEAN was also built on this premise that we need to maintain stability and peace in the region, which including deterring the spread of communism, because that was considered a direct threat to security of other nations in the region. And I think it's becoming too... just me talking. So I'm going to talk about in the last section here is shift from this creation of ASEAN and the containment policy into what role would such an organization, which has its roots in containing the policy of communism, how does that organization might or might not be helpful in the dispute that's being there and existing since at least past 10 years now, the South China Sea dispute. So what's happening with that, and how can a framework like the ASEAN can come together to create some peaceful resolutions to actually maintain the stability and economic growth in the region, which ASEAN was designed to do. And before I delve into that, I will play the song called Truthfully and one more on the same album. So coming up, Truthfully by Eva.
Truthfully and honestly, I
So you were listening to two songs from the album of 2019 called Truthfully, and it is by an artist, Canadian singer artist, Eva. And you were listening to two of her back-to-back songs, which I really, really enjoyed, honestly, if you ask me. And yeah, I think it's a very interesting music of hers. One of them is called Truthfully, and the other one you just heard was Honeycomb. And I know on the clock I just don't have enough time to talk about all the things related to the South China Sea dispute, what's happening there, and the recent developments, so to say, but I think I can just wrap up my thoughts here and just leave this discussion for today, which I think has been very beneficial for a student who is also grappling with the issue at the moment, and for listeners, is the way the organizations like ASEAN function and how decision making happens in such big intergovernmental organizations, international issues. One thing to remember is that many of these issues don't even think about what's happening to the people on the ground. So it's good to think about disputes like these from an intergovernment lens or international relation lens, but humanistic lens should not be left out of the picture. So I'm just going to talk about briefly the ASEAN's decision-making mechanism, because it's very different from how, let's say, we understand the way UN functions, or like how the decisions are made at different organizations, like, I don't know, NATO, or yeah. So it's different in the way ASEAN, because its decision making is done on a thing that is called the ASEAN way, which includes having decision being based on consensus building, which means that all of the countries who are part of the ASEAN have to agree on the proposal. So each one of them has to say yes, let's say, to a proposal, and that's when a decision would be made. So it's a very difficult stance to have, because each country has its own priorities, and each country, like in this issue, has different claims and understandings of the issue. So having a unanimous consent on an issue like this is sort of limiting what a great interconnected organization like ASEAN can do. And the association's loose structure, which is an essential component of its past success, is the ASEAN way, and how this asset actually is becoming a weakness in how the issue of the South China Sea dispute is being handled. So what I want to highlight here is the way in which ASEAN's behavior in the South China Sea is lacking some sort of assertive position, and that is leading to increased fragmentation in how the escalated events and military operations that are happening in the sea are changing how we understand the threat about that region, and with US also trying to counterbalance the growing presence of China and its creation of the fake islands and all those maritime, military, and naval show of forces. It is trying to lean on India. And yeah, I think that's an important point to leave this discussion at. Stay tuned at CGSF for Democracy Now!, which is happening in a second.